Welcome to Audacity Marketing with Hazel Kimpo and Michelle Frechette. On this podcast, we'll challenge you to think differently and break free of the same old strategies. We'll push you out of your comfort zone and encourage you to think outside the box. So take notes, make bold decisions, and be audacious.
Right. Welcome to Audacity Marketing. How you doing, Michelle?
I am good. How are you?
Pretty darn excellent. Today we are talking about brand affinity. You know I love brand affinity.
I know you do.
We're going to talk about what it even means, why it's so important, and the actual like scientific ways to get there. There's ways proven to help develop brand affinity in your audience to help them keep your brand top of mind and have that loyalty that makes them think of your brand first, always. So let's dive right in.
Absolutely.
I know that a lot of people, when I talk about brand affinity with clients and different folks trying to build in this, they tend to start talking about brand loyalty, which I think is a thing, but I want to talk about how they're different.
Mm-hmm.
To me, brand loyalty is programs to get you to stick around, but affinity, there's no the get to. Like, I think you choose to stick around. What would you say, mm-hmm. Michelle?
Yeah, I would say affinity begets loyalty, but loyalty doesn't necessarily beget affinity, right? So I can be loyal to a brand. Like when I used to drink soda, I was a Dr. Pepper girl, 2-3 Dr. Peppers a day, mm-hmm. right? And I was loyal to Dr. Pepper because I liked it. But I didn't have an affinity with it, right? It wasn't like I wasn't buying swag. I wasn't wearing t-shirts. I wasn't David Naughton running down the street singing, I want to be a Dr. Be a Pepper too kind of thing. So there's a difference for sure.
That is an excellent example of the difference between loyalty and affinity. And you could strive for both. And I think the magic happens when you have both. But I think it's important to differentiate them.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that? To me, brand affinity, I always refer to this one chart, which I know we're in a podcast, we can't all see, but I shared this chart with Michelle right before the call. I'm going to pull it up here so I can look at it. It's this survey that a group has done that talks about what are the reasons people give for their emotional brand connections.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a chart of the way a brand makes them feel. And the top three are the brand makes them feel like they care about people like me, like they are making positive differences in the world, and like they get me.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle, what are some brands you think that do that really well?
So I don't own a Jeep, but the people that I know that own Jeeps are total Jeep people. And I think that there's an affinity associated with that brand. And a couple of things happen when you're a Jeep owner. I have friends that own Jeeps. I've actually driven in a Jeep on the Watkins Glen Speedway. Because
what's the Watkins Glen Speedway?
It's like it's a NASCAR type. I don't think it's like the formula. I'm so not into racing, but it's a race. It's a car. Yeah, car racing, right? And so Jeep people have Jeep conventions and Jeep events and Jeep clubs. And so there's this affinity with the brand. They wear Jeep hats and shirts, and they trick out their Jeeps, and they drive with the doors off or doors on. And then there's this whole thing called ducking, right? So like people with Jeeps they have these little rubber duckies, and they put little tags on them that say like, ducking, love your Jeep. Talk about audacious.
Yep.
I ducking love your Jeep, or your Jeep is ducking awesome. And they put them on the front of the Jeep. So people who get ducked in their Jeeps, like it's this secret language or the secret initiation, or almost like a secret handshake amongst people.
I think speaking that language, like it is almost like a language in that way, right? Like, you know, the secret greeting and mm-hmm. speaking their language, I think is so key.
Yeah.
I watched the documentary last night, The Pez Outlaw on Netflix.
Oh, I saw it last week.
Okay, so let's talk about The Pez Outlaw for a second and how poorly Pez handled this.
Absolutely.
Because to me, it's interesting. This has happened back in the 90s. So you can see the way companies, I don't know, almost had this hostile view of their customers as opposed to them.
Yeah.
Like, the issue in this one is the Pez company was very upset at this man who was importing Pez from overseas, and it was really for a collector audience. And he was like printing ads. Some of the amount of money he was making compared to Pez was very little. To me, the ideal move for Pez would be to make their own limited edition stuff. Be very excited. Like, people are into selling them out. Make the limited edition. Learn from what the audience is telling you. Instead of trying to, in this documentary, Pez continually tries to write their own narrative instead of what the customers are wanting. And it ends up, like, they end up copying the guy to win, which is ruthless. But instead of trying to figure out ways to actually build that affinity for, they already have this affinity for their brand and they were shunning it. That was what was like wild to me in that documentary, that you had this strong affinity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I loved the show. I was like just dumbfounded by the way they handled it. Like, this guy is actually ordering. He designed his own Pez and he had them made at a Pez manufacturing plant. Like, and they they were sent to him on the official Pez cards, like in the bubble, like packaging or whatever, the, you know, the plastic
and
packaging.
And technically all legal through a series of loopholes.
All, yes, absolutely. And instead, and he's like charging $25 for these like $3 Pez or $2 Pez dispensers. And instead of, like you said, instead of going, ooh, we could have our own and do this, they duplicated exactly what he was doing and sold it for $3, thus undercutting him in the market and completely leaving him bereft and holding so much. He ended up literally burying on his farm all of these unsold Pez.
That's like right. Just
dumping them in the ground and covering them with dirt and walking away from the whole Pez everything. Now, he was a little eccentric, but that didn't
he was an interesting guy. But really, I think that it's a really good example of brand affinity being, I don't know, call it the right answer. Like, it's the very forward thinking answer. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you can watch this documentary and just see how blatantly wrong Pez was for not figuring out ways to make more money off of this and just focusing on ways to fight your fans. I think lots of brands had this early on. Like, Disney used to fight their fans when they would like try to dress like the characters, and it's like, no, now we encourage it, this sort of thing.
Exactly.
Thinking of brands with strong brand affinity, Disney, Starbucks, these like major corporate brands. The reason they're major corporate brands is because people, it's the most corporate thing in the world, but man, people love them some Starbucks brand.
Yeah. Not gonna lie, I have the app so I can accumulate points to get my free Starbucks swag all the time. All the time.
And then I think what's cool about brand affinity is it begets community, right? Like, by definition, even these crazy corporate brands like Starbucks, there's a community around, like, every time they release a cup. I guess this goes back to the Pez collector marketing strategy. There's a community around each time they release a cup, and it's like big news. I have a friend who's still like fighting for the matte black Starbucks cup if anybody sees it.
You know, but you're absolutely right. And to go back to the Jeep idea, right? I don't know if you know this, but Jeep actually hides things in their design. So like, if you pour over your Jeep with a fine tooth comb, you will find like embedded in plastic little animals and things like that as part of the, and so you go on this hunt and, you know, there's like, I don't know, I'm making the numbers up now, but like 25 secret little things that you can find in your Jeep. My friend who owns a Jeep for 4 years has only found 10, and she knows there's like 15 more in there. Right. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. And there's Facebook groups, like local Facebook groups around it. There's international Facebook groups around it. And the idea that it's, you really gives you that sense of belonging, which is what affinity is, right? So affinity means I align myself with this. I feel like you said, I feel like I belong, feel like they get me. And that's like the whole thing. I think we see that in WordPress, right? So the fact that it's this free open source software, and yet there's conferences all over the world. I'm going to Asia next week. Right? By the time we publish this, I'll be in Thailand. Because WordPress has built up a community and such an affinity, right, for the product, that people will be like, I could probably build a website faster if I just went to Wix and did a drag and drop, but I'm not going to do that because I'm loyal and I have an affinity for WordPress.
And I think one thing that's so interesting about WordPress, even about the Jeep one, about all of these, that affinity started organically with the community, right? So community, as I said earlier, affinity begets community, but frankly, it works the other way around too, right? It's like
it can,
as a
yeah, for sure.
community starts circulating around your brand organically, man, double down on that right away. If you see that happening organically, you've struck gold. Like that's better than product market fit to me. When you have two people using your product, market talking together that they like it.
Yeah.
Whew, that's magic.
Facilitate that. Facilitate it. Because when brands don't, you see what happens to things like Beanie Babies, right? Beanie Babies was one of those things that built. And then the Thai company decided it didn't want people having their own newsletters. They didn't want people having their own swap meets. And that's another not documentary, by the way. You can watch the one on Thai Beanie Babies. And the whole market fell out from underneath. And now people who think they're sitting on their retirement fund by having thousands of Beanie Babies in their closet basically just have an overpriced beanbag chair.
I remember that. Now, I bet some people that have a software out there, my example of my go-to software du jour for boring software is payroll processing software. So let's say you're running a payroll processing software and you're like, sure, Michelle and Hazel, Starbucks and Jeep, that's easy for them. But right. I sell payroll software. How is anybody going to care? I'll tell you about an organization. They went out of business, and the end of the story doesn't go well. Beginning of this story, though, for brand affinity, there's a company called Fast that was just a payment gateway for websites. Like, that is the most boring type of software. It's lucrative, but man, it is utilitarian and boring. People, they had hoodies. People were dying for these hoodies. All they said were Fast. They had this brand affinity they had really just built by having a strong community of like people that cared about commerce. They figured out the human portion of their business product. And I think once you figure out that human portion of your business product, that's where the affinity comes in, because it's not, B2B is still bought by humans.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. When I was running payroll for a massage school back in the day, the next place that I worked at, when somebody said, oh, do you know a payroll people? I was like, oh, you got to use the ones I just was working with, because they were so good. And the people were amazing to talk to. Like I still remember the woman's name that I talked to every week when I called in my payroll. And I remember calling her saying, hey, it's my last week. And I just wanted to say goodbye, because
that's amazing,
right? You build that affinity with the people. If it isn't like the taste of the Dr. Pepper or something. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I think no matter the product, there is a human connection to be had.
Absolutely.
Well, cool. I think, what do we got next to talk about here, Michelle?
I don't have it in front of me. What are we going to talk about? Let's see. Word of mouth marketing, right? So that's the one thing that your brand affinity can absolutely lead to, that word of mouth marketing. Back in the 80s, there was a shampoo called Gee, Your Hair Smells Terrific. And it was Heather Locklear. And she said, it smells so good and it feels so good that you'll tell two friends and they'll tell two friends and so on and so on and so on. And every time she said, and so on, the number of her like duplicated on the screen, right? So that suddenly 20 Heather Locklears are telling you how great the shampoo is. But that's the whole idea, is that word of mouth marketing and viral marketing can spread that way, because I tell you, now you tell two people, those two people each tell two people, and it spreads like that. As long as you have the right product or service to back up the what people are saying about you. So it all falls apart.
100%.
If the product sucks or the service for it doesn't work, then it's all just lip service.
And I think that it segues into cool. People like my brand. So what? I think some of the so what is, man, get those people to write reviews. If you've figured out brand affinity, you've figured out testimonials and reviews, which go to any conversion rate optimization site on the website. They will tell you, it's scientifically proven. People just want to see that someone else has liked and bought the product. And if you have affinity, I would make sure you have the content around that, to use the parlance of the terms that people call it UGC, user generated content. I think that sounds very cold, but it honestly, if you have brand affinity, that's where you should connect.
Testimonial, social proof is
social proof.
Social proof is absolutely paramount to success in today's market.
I think the other thing you'll get out of this, on that same note, is amplification in a revenue way, right? Like, you can build your own ambassador and affiliate program. And I'll call it an ambassador program more than an affiliate program, even if you are giving them a kickback, because folks that have brand affinity should be motivated more to share a problem that they solved as opposed to sharing it for the financial gain. But the financial gain is a nice benefit.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you have all of those things, then your tipping point is obvious, right? And people will want to, it'll take off. I often think about, where did certain terminologies come from? Like, at one point, one person said, "That's awesome sauce." And suddenly everybody in North America was saying awesome sauce. Well, it started with point one person, and it took off like wildfire. And that's what you want to find. You want to find the awesome sauce in your brand affinity.
Yep. And then I think last would be repeat purchases. We get stuck as marketers really thinking about, like, how do we get new eyeballs? How do we get new eyeballs? How do we get new eyeballs? People that have like a lot of affinity to your brand, don't forget them, because they'll become resentful and go on to the next one, and it'll be a deeper chasm than if they had just drifted away. That repeat revenue, man, that's the low-hanging fruit of the world for me.
Yeah, that's why the Jeep company needs to make Jeeps with a lower entry point, physical entry point, so that as people age in, it's still easy to get it in and out of their Jeep.
I like that idea. We'll write that into Jeeps. Well, great. I think that's going to wrap it up for us today, Michelle.
Absolutely.
I hope you have a great trip in Asia.
Thank you so much. Yeah, absolutely. And
I wanted to put the word out there that we'll be looking for guests for future podcasts. Do you want to share a little bit about what kind of guests we might be looking for?
If you have an idea in marketing that is audacious, we want to know about it. So we want to hear what works for you. What are some ways that you went out on a limb or took that leap of faith? And what is your product or your proposal or your story? And we want to help you share that with other people so that they can find their audacity and their success also.
Awesome. Thanks, Michelle. And I hope this podcast episode was helpful for everyone. We'll see you next time.
See ya. This has been Michelle Rochette and Hazel Kimpo with Audacity Marketing. Dare to be different and dominate your market with audacity.